2. Job chapter 2. I'd like to read the first 10 verses, Job chapter 2, verses 1 through 10. Again, there was a day when the sons of God, which are the saved, came to present themselves before the Lord. And Satan came also among them, that is, the sons of God, to present himself before the Lord. And the Lord said unto Satan, From whence comest thou? Satan answered the Lord and said, From going to and fro in the earth, and from walking up and down in it. And the Lord said unto Satan, Hast thou considered my servant Job? That there is none like him in the earth, perfect and an upright man, one that feareth God and escheweth evil, and still he holdeth fast his integrity. Although thou movest me against him, destroy him without cause. And Satan answered the Lord and said, Skin for skin, yea, all that a man hath will he give for his life. But put forth thine hand now and touch his bone and his flesh, and he will curse thee to thy face. And the Lord said unto Satan, Behold, he is in thine hand. Save his life. So went Satan forth from the presence of the Lord and smote Job with sore boils from the sole of his foot unto his crown. He took him a posture, broken piece of pottery, to scrape himself withal. And he sat down among the ashes. Then said his wife unto him, Dost thou still retain thine integrity? Curse God and die. He said unto her, Thou speakest as one of the foolish women speaketh. What? Shall we receive good at the hand of God? And shall we not receive evil? In all this, did not Job sin with his lips? The book of Job is perhaps the most fascinating book in the Word of God, has intrigued readers for generations. Innumerable people have found peace, have found comfort in the book of Job. If you pick up a commentary in the book of Job, you'll more than likely read that the main question or the main subject of the book is, why do the righteous suffer? You'll read that the main subject of the book is the sovereignty of God and human suffering. And no doubt the book plainly does teach that there is suffering. And no doubt the book definitely teaches that God is in absolute control of all things, even human suffering. But I do not believe that human suffering is the central focus on the book. I believe the most important thing in this book is to focus on how Job reacts to his suffering and what Job learns from his suffering. It's not so much about why do the righteous suffer. It's really about a challenge that Satan issued back in chapter 1. Notice if we turn there in chapter 1, verse 9, he said, Then Satan answered the Lord and said, Doth Job fear God for naught? Hast not thou made a hedge about him and about his house and about all that he hath on every side? Thou hast blessed the work of his hands, and his substance is increased in the land. But put forth thine hand now and touch all that he hath, and he will curse thee to thy face. Satan then in chapter 2, in verse 5, issued a similar challenge. He said, If you take away his health, Job will curse you, God. And I believe the book goes back to these two statements. This is the question implied in these two challenges is, will anyone remain faithful to God Will anyone remain faithful to God even though they get nothing in return? I believe that's the subject of the book. Satan asks, will a man obey God for nothing? Will a man obey God and serve God when it appears that he is getting absolutely nowhere? That is the question that Satan is implying. The question concerning Job here is, will he curse God or will he cling to God? And the truth is that the story of Job is going on everywhere right now. We don't have the suffering to the extent that Job had. But does not God allow Satan to test us, to afflict us, to tempt us? And the question with each and every one of us, will we continue? Will we continue to obey and serve God when bad things happen? That's the subject. That's the main focus of the book. Will we serve God? Will we obey God when the blessings of God are nowhere in sight? That's the question. Will we cling to God? Or will we murmur and complain and curse God? So though the book of Job is a brief biography of this man, we keep coming back to a couple of things in the book of Job. We keep coming back to what is recorded there in verses 20 through 22. Then Job arose and rent his mantle and shaved his head and fell down upon the ground and worshipped. And said, naked came I out of my mother's womb and naked shall I return thither. The Lord gave and the Lord hath taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. In all this Job sinned not, nor charged God foolishly. We always come back to that. We also always come back to what is written in Job 2 in verse 9. Or in verse 10, I mean, in all this did not Job sin with his lips. We always come back to Job 13 in verse 15. Though he slay me, yet I will trust him. We always come back to what is written there in Job 19 and verse 25. For I know that my Redeemer liveth. The point of all of this is Job is not a victim. Job is victorious. Job is the victor. I want to speak today from verse 8. And he sat down among the ashes. I want to speak on that subject, sitting in the ashes. I want to consider Job under three points. First of all, Job is a devout man. Secondly, we want to see Job as the distressed man. And then thirdly, Job as the dependent man. But first of all, consider Job as the devout man. Consider the character of Job. We are told in the first chapter that Job was a man who had seven sons and three daughters. From what we read in Job 1 and verse 4, his sons and daughters are together eating, feasting. Job had his sons and daughters were grown. His sons and daughters still got along. They were a close-knit, united family. We see also that Job was a man of great possessions. He had 7,000 sheep. He had 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, and 500 donkeys. He had many, many servants. He was a renowned man. We read in verse 3 that he was the greatest of all the men of the East. But more importantly than all of this, Job was a man of godly character. We read there in verse 1, we read several things about Job. We read that he was perfect. That doesn't mean that he was sinless. It means that he was blameless. It means there was nothing in Job's life that you could point to. He was a man of righteous character. He was a perfect man. He was upright. That means he was right with God. He was right in a spiritual sense. He lived his life like you ought to live your life. He was a man that feared God. That is, he was a man who had a deep reverence for God. He was a man that eschewed evil. That means he was a man who was separated. It means that he abstained himself from evil. We also read the same thing of Job in verse 8 of chapter 1. And then in chapter 2 and verse 3, the same things are repeated again. But in chapter 2 and verse 3, something is added. He holdeth fast his integrity. That is, Job was steadfast and consistent in his godly character. Job was steadfast and consistent in his reverence. He was steadfast and consistent in his abstaining from sin and keeping separate from sin. In other words, Job kept right with God. He wasn't up one day and down the next. He was a man of consistency. We read something else of Job. Twice, God referred to him as my servant, Job. What an honor. Chapter 1, verse 8. Hath thou considered my servant, Job? Chapter 2, verse 3. Hast thou considered my servant, Job? Job was a servant of God. We've already stated that he was a father. He had 10 children. But he was not just a father. He was a father who cared deeply about the spiritual condition of his children. We learn that from chapter 1 and verse 5. That he rose up early in the morning and offered burnt offerings according to the number of them all. That is, according to his children. He offered up burnt offerings on the behalf of his children. For Job said, it may be that my sons have sinned and have cursed God in their hearts. And Job did this continually. That is, every morning Job got up. And somewhere on his property, he had an altar. And he went to that altar, and every day he offered up lambs for his children and for himself. This is what we're told about the character of Job. But also consider Job the distressed man, and this is what most people think of when they think of Job. As you read the book of Job, you realize that suffering is a part of God's plan for our lives. It's a part of God's economy for our lives. And when you think of human suffering, you can't help but think of Job. Job is a classic example of suffering. I would go as far to say that Job is really an extreme example of suffering. But let's consider Job the distressed man. One of the first things we learn is that we do not know what a day may bring forth. Proverbs 27 and verse 1, boast not thyself of tomorrow, for thou knowest not what a day may bring forth. Now notice in Job chapter 1 and verse 13, notice the first four words of that verse. And there was a day. And there was a day. And oh, what a day it was. No one wants a day like this day. It was a day that started out like every other day. Day in which Job woke up healthy, and wealthy. Job woke up that day, his family was intact. Job woke up that day, blessed of God. His family was blessed of God. I don't imagine that there were any major problems in Job's life at this time. No major difficulties in his life at this time. Life was good. Life was good for Job. Life was good for Job's family. And there was a day. And there was a day. And though it started out like any other day in Job's life, it was a day unlike any other day in Job's life. It was a day that Job's world would come crashing down. It would be a day that would drastically change Job's way of living. On this particular day, in a very short span of time, a godly and renowned man would be immersed and crushed with sorrow, with a burden. And there was a day. And again, though it started like any other day, it was a day that would bring disaster to Job's life. It was a day that would be quite a blow to Job. We are told of the events of that day in chapter 1, verse 13 through 22. And then when we get over to chapter 2 and verse 1, we read again, there was a day that speaks of a different day. So now we have two different days. We have the day in Job chapter 1, and now we have a different day in Job chapter 2. Was it the next day? I don't know. But it was very soon to follow the day in Job chapter 1. There's no doubt about that. It was a day also that would be quite a jolt to Job. It would be a day of calamity. It would be a day of disaster. It would be a day filled with pain and agony. And it would be a day in which his wife would betray him. A day in which his health would leave him. So we want to consider these 2 days in the life of Job. 2 days. 2 days unlike any other day. Again, boast not thyself of tomorrow, for thou knowest not what a day may bring forth. In Job chapter 1, we read of a day of unexpected, unprecedented, and unexplained suffering. God doesn't always explain why he does what he does. Why he allows what he allows. Perhaps on this day that we read of in Job chapter 1, Job's sitting out on his patio, if they had patios. But he's sitting out there enjoying a nice day. And a messenger comes running in. His clothes are wet. Sweat is running down his face. This man is gasping for breath. And with a panic-stricken look upon his face, and no doubt with hysteria in his voice, he says, Job, we were working in the fields, and the Sabaeans came down without any warning. They attacked us. They took the 500 yoke of oxen. They took the 500 donkeys. And they slaughtered the servants. And I'm the only one left. As this man is speaking, there comes another servant. He also is gasping for breath. He also has a panic-stricken look on his face. He also is speaking with hysteria in his voice, and he says, Job, fire came down and burned up the 7,000 sheep and all the servants that were tending to them. Job, they're all dead. They've all been killed. And while this man was speaking, you can't imagine what Job was feeling at this moment. But as this man was speaking, a third messenger came. He too gasping for breath with a look of panic on his face. He says, Job, the Chaldeans have attacked. And they have stolen the 3,000 camels and killed all the servants with the sword. While this servant is speaking, the fourth messenger comes. This man, you cannot imagine the horror on his face. And Job knows something is terribly, terribly wrong. And I'm sure the man even struggled to get the words out. I'm sure he was weeping. And he was beside himself. He said, Job, your seven sons, perhaps he named them by name. Your three daughters, and perhaps he named them by name. They were all at your eldest son's house. A powerful wind swooped down, and the house came crashing down. And Job, they're all dead. All your children are dead. All this happened in one day. Perhaps in a matter of minutes, I don't know. But no doubt in a very short time span. He lost all his possessions. He not only lost his possessions, in losing his possessions, he lost his livelihood. He lost all of his, or not all of them, but he lost his servants. There were four that survived. I believe he knew those servants by name. Job was a godly man. Job cared about his servants. And worst of all his children were dead. How is Job going to tell his wife this news? What's he going to say? Again, this was a day of unexpected, unprecedented, and unexplained suffering and anguish. A day of overwhelming grief and sorrow. A day of immeasurable loss. And one day, Job goes from a man of great wealth to a person of absolute poverty. In one day, he goes from being a happy father to a childless mourner in just a matter of minutes. And then in chapter 2, we read again, there was a day. On this particular day, Job woke up healthy. We read that Satan smote Job. That is, Satan attacked Job, and he attacked him with sore. That is, very painful and hurting and aching. Boils. Pus-filled swelling on the skin. And this was from the sole of his feet to the crown of his head. And one day, Job went from being strong and healthy to a man filled with discomfort, to a man filled with pain and misery. And on top of all of this, no doubt broken and devastated by the loss, Job's wife comes out in great anger and in much bitterness and disbelief as she sees Job sitting in the ashes worshiping God. She says, "Are you still going to worship? Are you still going to worship and serve that God?" Remember what Satan said. You take away everything he has and he'll curse you. You take away his health and he'll curse you. And Job's wife can't believe what she's seen. "Job, how can you continue to worship God? Job, just curse God and die." What she's saying is, "Job, we have nothing to live for. Life is over for us. Just curse God and die." Oh, how many people I've heard say many times, "I have nothing to live for." Then why does God allow you to live? But that's how we get sometimes. Job is suffering. But then look at Job, the dependent man. We go back to Job chapter 1. In verse 20, we read that after the four messengers came with their terrible and devastating news, then Job arose. I imagine he had a hard time standing up. There's a reason you tell people to sit down when bad news is going to come. They're likely to pass out. Job somehow arose to his feet. Imagine he staggered. He wobbled. He was dazed. Completely stunned. Dumbfounded. And shocked. We read in verse 20 that Job rent his mantle, shaved his head, and fell down upon the ground. These were the ordinary ways of mourning. These were the ordinary ways of expressing grief and anguish. And those words reveal the fact that Job was devastated. Job was not superhuman. He was devastated by the news of the day. You can imagine the sorrow, the suffering that Job had at this moment. But I just imagine that when Job fell down to the ground, that Satan thought for sure, "Here he comes. He's going to curse you, God." Satan. Then Job did the extraordinary. He mourned like an ordinary man would mourn. But then he did something that an ordinary man's not going to do. And he worshiped. Satan can't believe it. "How can this man worship?" Satan fell down to the ground and he worshiped. He had lost all his possessions. He had lost everything that most people live for. He lost his possessions. He lost his livelihood. He lost his children. And what does Job do? He worships. That's grace. And Satan, he thought for sure that Job would be falling down to the ground and becoming angry and throwing up his hands and say, "That's it, I quit." But that's not what Job did. Satan was completely baffled by the response of Job. Here's what we hear today when tragedy strikes. Brother Dan, where is God? Where is God? How could this happen? What can I do now? Where do I go from here? We don't hear any of those things from Job. Job worshiped. He worshiped. That means what it says. That means he praised God. That means he thanked God. That means he submitted and surrendered to God. Oh, we're so far removed from the heart of Job. Our car won't start and we kick the tires and mumble and complain. Job lost everything and he worshiped. When was the last time you had a small difficulty, your car wouldn't start, and you fell down and worshiped? We don't even worship when something goes wrong with our car. Job has lost everything. And he worshiped God. He worshiped. That means he took his proper place before God. It means he trusted God. Worship is an act of faith. He still had faith in God. He worshiped. Worship is an act of praise. He was still praising. Worship, the best definition of worship, is really declaring the worth of God. It's telling God how great he is. And this is what Job was doing that day. I imagine the four messengers were still there. And I imagine they were somewhat stunned, perhaps, at Job's response. But then notice in verse 22 of chapter 1, three very, very important words. In all this, referring back to the news that the four messengers would bring to Joseph. In all this, Job sinned not. Don't you see that's the main thing? Because Satan said, if you take everything he has, if you allow me to take everything he has, I know he'll curse you. No man will serve God if he has nothing in return. In all this, Job sinned not. He never once murmured. He never once cursed God. He worshiped. Nothing has been explained to Job. God has not told Job, this is why this is happening in your life, and Job, everything's going to be all right. This is unexplained suffering. In all this, referring back to the loss of his possessions, referring back to the loss of his livelihood, referring back to the loss of his family, in all of this, how many times people will say, oh, it's just one thing after another. When it rains, it pours. In all of this, Job sinned not. And that completely befuddled the devil. Because the devil just knew no man will serve you if he gets nothing in return. How many of us would serve God if there was absolutely nothing in it for us? If we got nothing in return, we need to answer that question. But I want to say, if God could uphold Job in all of this, you can be sure today that he can help you You can be sure today that he can support you. Job continued a spiritual practice. After Job had experienced all of this in chapter 1, and after he'd been smitten with boils from the bottom of his feet to the top of his head, we read in verse 8 of chapter 2, and he sat down among the ashes. It's not that we're so wise, but I find that commentators miss the point here. They will say that this is referring to the sorrow of Job, no doubt. There's more to it than that. There's much more to it than that. He sat down among the ashes. A little while ago, he owned 7,000 sheep. A little while ago, he had 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, 500 donkeys, 10 children, and a wife. Now he's a man. He was a man who was the greatest of all the men of the East. And now he's sitting in the ashes with a broken piece of pottery, scraping himself. But I don't believe that's all that Job was doing that day. And we agree with the commentators that sitting in the ashes is an expression of suffering. We see that all through the Old Testament. It's an expression of grief. It's an expression of humility. It's a picture of someone who is deeply hurting. There he sits in the ashes. But I go back to what I read in chapter 1 and verse 5. And let's go back there, and I believe we understand more fully. And he sat in the ashes. In verse 5, Job would rise up early in the morning. And by the end of the verse, we see this is something he did continually. In other words, he had a practice. He rose up early in the morning. And every morning, he would go out and he would offer sacrifice for his children. He did this every single morning. What this means is that Job had a practice. But it also means that Job had a place. Somewhere on his property, Job had erected an altar. And Job, every single morning, would go to that altar. And he would worship God. Every single day, Job would go to that altar. He would carry a lamb. He would go to the altar. The altar's up here. He would go to the altar. He would slit the throat of that lamb. He would drain the blood out of that lamb. He would then fillet that lamb. And he would then offer that lamb to God. And he did that every day. That altar. Now in Job chapter 2, Job is sitting in the ashes. What ashes is he sitting in? I believe that Job went out that morning and Job went to his altar where he had always gone before, where he had found the presence of God, where he had found the peace of God. And Job sat down in the ashes and he began to scrape himself. But that's not all he did. He raised his hands to God and he began to worship. And he said, Lord, I don't know what you're doing. I don't even know where you're at. But Lord, you've never failed me. You've never let me down. And I'm trusting you today that you're still not going to let me down. I believe that's what happened that day. He had a practice.
And he had a place. And we need that practice today where we meet with God every morning. We need a place. And when tragedy strikes, go to that place, because that's where you'll find the power of the Lord. And Job sat in the ashes. Oh, I think it's time that many of God's people would come and sit in the ashes. Husbands and wives need to sit in the ashes and lift up their hands to God and praise God and thank God and say, Lord, I don't understand everything right now, but Lord, you've never let me down, and I'm trusting that you're not going to let me down now. Oh, we need to trust God. We need to take our place in the ashes. Brother Jeff, if you come, lead us in verse song. Let's all